Welcome to Real Talk JavaScript, the weekly talk show that brings you stories of real-world development from industry experts and developers like you and me. Each week, Ward Bell, Dan Wallin, Craig Shoemaker, and John Papa find out what it takes to write, deploy, and maintain apps that stand up to the demands of the real world. And now, here are your hosts.
Welcome back to Real Talk JavaScript. This is an episode that you've been waiting for. We know you have. It's all about getting a career in tech or keeping your career in tech, or what's it like to have a career in tech. And today I've got my co-host, Ward Bell, with me. How you doing, Ward?
Doing great.
Wow.
You want more? Is that, I mean, what's higher than great? What's better than great? Fantabulous.
Okay, on that note, we've also got Craig Shoemaker here with you. How you doing, Craig?
I'm good. I can't wait to start my career in tech. I'm just so excited.
It's going to be one of those episodes, isn't it? And today we also...
I never had a career in tech, by the way. So nobody would call what I've been doing for the last 50 years a career.
No, I think you've had a very unique and amazing and profound career, quite frankly. You've influenced me. Let's put it that way. And we've also got today, our guest is Emma Bostian. How you doing, Emma?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing really good. And for those of you out there who may not be aware, let me tell you a little bit about Emma. Emma is a software engineer working for Spotify, living in Stockholm, and she travels the world every day on Twitter. So you can find her out there with her many... many sharings that she has on social media. And if you're not on Twitter, boo-hoo. So.
I can already feel the sassiness of this episode.
You know, it's one of those things I've been talking more about. Like, I recently left Facebook and I'm like, should I just completely break from all social media? I don't know. It's
I'm doing that too, John. I'm bailing out of Facebook as soon as I figure out how.
It is difficult. People say just get off, right? But I have a massively large Italian family, and this is how we communicate, is through Facebook.
Me too. But mine's not Italian. Mine's Scottish.
All right. So today's topic, all about career. Emma, when we talked a little bit before the show, you were talking about various ways your career was influenced in tech and kind of how you got into it. And you had some advice for others. I know you've been writing books too about this. So I was hoping we can kind of bounce around to these different topics, but maybe if you want to lead us off on what's most on your mind.
Yeah, for sure. I just maybe want to preface this conversation with the fact that like my experiences and all the advice that I give, it's coming from my experience. And so take this with a grain of salt, right? Like everyone's experience and journey is going to be different. Everyone's ability to move abroad, pick up and move abroad like I did. Some people don't have that privilege. And so, you know, just take everything I say with a grain of salt. But I don't know. Where do you want to start? There's so much to, you know, from creating a resume to building a portfolio to actually going through the interview process.
Well, let's start with what is a career in tech even mean? Like, why would somebody even want a career in tech in the first place?
That's a good point, because I didn't want to join tech. I was vehemently, how do you say that word? Vehemently? I don't know, but I'm going to say it like that. I was very opposed to joining the tech industry because I grew up with two parents in the industry itself. And you know, as a kid, I don't know, I know John, you've got kids. I don't know if Craig or Ward have kids, but if you tell your kid you should do this, they're going to do the exact opposite. And that's what I did.
That's true.
I joined, you know, I started as a bio major and I realized I was horrible. So I switched into tech, and for me, that was, I went the computer science degree route. Nowadays, you really don't, there are actually pros and cons to a degree. It might be interesting to quickly touch on that. For me, it allowed me to get an internship at IBM. I was doing backend test automation with Python, and then transitioned to a full-time career. But for some people, they join tech as a second career, maybe, or they attend a boot camp, or they're just plain self-taught, or maybe they have a degree in English and they switch in. So everyone's path looks a little bit different, but something I wish I kind of knew before this was you don't have to be a software engineer. Like, you could be front-end, you can be back-end dev, you could do quality assurance engineering, you can be a UX designer, a UX engineer, a manager. There are so many different roles within tech that if you don't like, I hated Java, for example. John and I went to the same college, so he can attest to this, but we learned, well, I don't know. Did you learn Java as your primary language? And
Java and C++ were the two I took when I went there.
Okay. I hated Java. Like it really destroyed me. so when I found web development, it was like, oh, there's a career that I can have in tech that I don't hate. So yeah, career in tech is really quite open-ended.
So since you went like the opposite way first, what drew you back to it? How did you originally decide, okay, whether it's one thing or another, I want to try and give this a go?
So I was, it's the first semester of my freshman year, I was a biology major and I failed my chemistry final. Like I got a 50. I did really badly my first semester. This is coming from someone who worked really hard in school and got really good grades up until college. And I remember being at P.F. Chang's, one of my favorite restaurants, I miss it dearly, with my dad and being like, hey, I'm going to switch colleges. I'm going to go transfer to a music degree. And he was like, you know what? I support you, but I don't agree with this decision. And I think you should really think hard about it. And so at that point, I was like, you know what? He's right. And so I was like, well, I like math, right? So I switched into actuarial science, which is a lot of statistics. And I took intro to computer science, intro to programming. Intro to computer, I don't know, it doesn't matter. And I remember learning about hexadecimal and binary and octal and being like, you know what? This allows me to mesh the creative side of my brain with the analytical side. And it just stuck.
Awesome.
I remember going to college and learning about binary and hex and all that. And in my beginning of my college career, I thought, geez, if computers are so limited because they're binary, why not just make a trinary system? like nobody had ever thought of this before, right? Just go one level higher.
We have quantum computers now with the qubits, you know. Not the same exactly as a trinary, but it's close.
Sure, everything's better with the rule of three, though, you know.
Yes, jokes in particular. I want to roll it back a little bit here to, A, what does a career mean to you, Emma? And also, I want to get at, what was it? I don't think a language is actually the reason one decides that one hates something. It had to be something about the nature of your experience in learning it or the people you were around or something like that, that put you off of it. And there must have been something that you liked when you sort of came back to it. And I'm so how do you, what's a career for you, and what are the kinds of things that turn people on and off to this career?
That's interesting. So I just grabbed a book that was gifted to me for my birthday. It's called The Squiggly Career. It's talking about how you can ditch the ladder, discover opportunity, and design your own career. Because today, careers are not linear. Whereas in the past, you might go from software engineer to senior software engineer to staff software engineer, and it was very linear. Now you can really take your career into your own hands and hopefully you can link this in the show notes, but this book does a great job at meshing activities for you to figure out what kind of career that you want for yourself with teachings. So I highly recommend that. It was written by two women. And so for me, my career has never really been linear. My career has been very horizontal because I've switched roles every couple of years, and that really put me in a deficit. I've never been promoted. I think a lot of people see me on Twitter and they're like, oh, she has 100,000 followers. She must be really successful and be a super senior software engineer. I'm like, no, I'm still just a software engineer at this point, technically, because when you switch careers, when you switch roles or companies every 2 years, you essentially can backtrack to a certain extent. And that's what I've done.
I'm glad you brought that up. And sorry to get there, because I think this is really good to pull on for a minute for you, is that I believe a lot of people feel like, not everybody, might feel like you get into this, you just continually get promoted. But early in the career, I know my experience was that promotions early in the career, you know, you're getting your 5% raise kind of thing. But the best way to actually make more money in some cases is to actually switch jobs earlier in your
career.
Very
true. It's
and maybe
very
not
true.
Just money, but also higher positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because when I joined IBM, I was making about $75,000 straight out of college. yeah, absurd amount of money. And I did not know how to balance my finances very well. That's a whole other story. When I moved to Germany, the salary was much lower because the cost of living is lower. So I actually took a pay cut, like 10,000 or so. But given the cost of living, I ended up with more at the end of the month. To me, like it, I encourage people out there, like, don't compare yourselves to your peers, especially when you live in different parts of the world.
Great advice.
A software engineer in New York, which is, so the way IBM worked is like, I got two job offers. I got one in Poughkeepsie, New York, and I got one in Austin, Texas. And the way they do it is they provide you one offer and it extends out to different teams or different locations. So I got the offer in New York for a cryptography job. And obviously it was a higher salary because I would be living in New York and that's more expensive, but I accepted the job in Texas. So that salary transferred to Texas. Now, that being said, a regular software engineer in Austin, Texas, or in New York is not going to make the same amount as a software engineer in Germany, where the average salary is about 50,000 euro per year. And so just be mindful of that. I always encourage people not to compare yourself to others. It's really hard, especially if you're on the internet. But you have a unique career and a unique portfolio. So for me, you know, I have my software engineering career, but I also have side projects. And so what I might bring to the table is going to be vastly different from someone who has the better design skills than me or is a full stack engineer. So I would always encourage you, like, if you get a job offer, your first job offer, do research. Like, look at the market value for someone in your position and see what they're making in that locale. Could you talk to your friends about it? Yeah, you could. But at the end of the day, you have to be the one to make that decision of, is this a valuable offer? Like, is this enough for me? That was a little bit of a tangent, but.
No, that's all really good information because, man, everybody goes through this. Everybody at every stage of your career wonders, am I getting paid what I'm worth? Is mm-hmm. where I'm living, is that make a difference? What do I really want too? Like, yeah. I was talking with somebody earlier this morning about, it took me 22 years of my career to figure out what actually fulfills me. Mm-hmm. And that may sound like I'm really stupid, but it took a while to really figure it out. And
yeah,
that list does change. But for me, like, some of the things in the list, I'm going to be honest, money is one of the parts. Like, one of my top five things is money. I've got four kids and my wife takes care of them at home. I'm the only one earning income. I need to make sure that everything's set up. So that is important.
For what it's worth, I want anyone listening to recognize there's no shame in asking for more money or, like, being concerned with your base salary, because we all have families, whether that's just you, whether that's you and your partner, you know, you and your two cats, whatever it is, you know, you should never feel
or
bad.
Or like Craig, you and your 27 cats, right?
Well, okay. They're not my 27 cats.
Uh-huh. Sorry, Emma. I had to go there for a minute.
No, it's all good. But yeah, I think there's this big taboo, especially with women in tech, you know, all women in tech, right? Women of color, intersectional women, white women, like, we on general negotiate less than our male counterparts. Not really sure how that came about or why. And I don't really want to get into all of that because I don't personally know. But never feel bad for negotiating. Even if they give you a great offer, it's still worth it. For me personally, when I started, I was like, only concerned with the money. I had a lot of medical debt I needed to pay off. Now that I've paid that off, my priorities have shifted. Now for me, what's more important is being surrounded by diverse coworkers, people that I can learn from, not just technical skills, but you know, broaden my mindset and learn more about other cultures. Flexible time off. This is something that's very important to me. I think in Europe in general, we get 30 days vacation, which is really great. Not that I'm a parent, but the parental leave here is much better. It's government assisted, I believe. So it's mandatory that all jobs provide like 6 months, you know, parental leave between men and women. So the father and the mother. These things are more important to me now than a base salary. But, you know, you need to figure out what's your main priority when looking at a job offer, and always negotiate.
That's great advice. And I have some advice now for everybody out there. We have a word from our sponsors. Please take a listen.
Hey, are you building apps in React, Angular, Node, or some other framework? Well, with NX, you can build your full stack apps in a shared monorepo, integrate with modern tools, and reinforce best practices. You'll get advanced code generation and automatically configured tooling like Cypress, Jest, and Prettier that will simplify your workflow. NX also helps you simplify the relationships between applications and shared libraries to make it easier to share more code and develop more consistently across teams. And the best part is, you'll build higher quality apps and spend less time on configuration. So visit nx.dev to get Narwhal's popular open source toolkit for monorepo development today.
And we're coming back. And, you know, Emma, I appreciate you sharing that, because a couple of things I picked out of that were that what you want, what's important to you, can change through time. And it's already changed for you, as you've mentioned. And there is no shame in understanding what fulfills you or what makes you, what you need. We all need money to survive. So asking for more money, I always tell people when you're getting a job, whatever level you're at, there's no harm in asking for something. Worst thing they can do is say no.
I've had that situation where I negotiated, and there's a way to negotiate properly, right? So the general formula here is thank them and say, you're very grateful for this. You really are excited about joining the team. But given everything that you're going to be bringing, maybe list out a few things, you were looking for a salary more in this range. That is much better than being like, oh, you know, if you don't give me this salary, I'm going to leave. Let me tell you a secret. By the time that a company has offered you a job, they've invested financially and time-wise, I don't know if there's a word for that, in you. And so they want you. And so no, generally, I don't want to say this is never the case, but in 99.9% of cases, they will never revoke a job offer simply for you asking if there's a wiggle room.
You know, I think that's good to hear, because something else I want to add on to that too is, as your life changes, young and I'm getting older, there's things that are changing which are important to you, and benefits have gotten more important to me as time has gone on. So you mentioned the time off and the parental leave and things like that. I never had any of that parental leave when I had the children, and my wife had the children, frankly. I was just there. But, you know, we never had those things. But now, like, when you look at a job, the salary is one aspect. What else do they offer? Some of these things may be important to you. Some may not be. But think about the whole package when you're talking to people. And the other piece of that is I will admit there's been times where I've been offered a job and I've asked for something else and I thought it was polite. And I can remember one specific time in my career where the job was revoked immediately.
Really?
And it really hurt me. And I felt like, what did I do wrong? But then through time, I realized that that wasn't the right job for me then. Because if that company was so hinged on that, I mean, that's because I always look at it this way, and this has never changed through my career. When you're in an interview and you're in that negotiating process, both the employer and the employee are kind of on their best behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, you both want to make a really good impression. You're like interviewing for the job. Yeah, like a first date. Yeah. Your employer's interviewing you, you're interviewing them, everybody's doing great. And if you start seeing signs of not good stuff, red flags, it might be good to just back away at that point. And I know it's hard sometimes, but that was a job I'm glad I didn't get.
Yeah, I also want to say too, like the ability to say no to an employer that's given you an offer is definitely a privilege, because there are many people who've lost their jobs, you know, due to the current situation right now that's been going on for several months. Some people don't have the luxury of A, having multiple job offers, B, being able to say, you know what, no, this is not a good fit. Let me re-interview with other people. So I just wanted to kind of call that out.
It's a great call out. Sometimes you need to take what you need to take because your life just really depends on it. So. Mm-hmm.
So let me play the employer for a second, because I more often...
Because you are an employer.
Yes. And say that it's wise to realize that it is a negotiation and that the employer will be saying, I'd love to give that to you, John, but I just can't. Let's find something, you know. And a good... You know, a seasoned employer won't get freaked out by your most outlandish ask. They'll simply steer you in a direction that would try and find a way. Maybe I can't give you that number, that dollar amount, because I'm not allowed to give you that dollar amount. But maybe there's something else we can do. So as somebody who's, you know, like, if you're coming to me for the job, be ready for the employer to say, I can't give you A, but let's find some B that will work. If you're fixated on something, then you're going to create a kind of tension that will cause me to say, you know what, I don't need this. Thanks very much for coming in, John. And that'll be the end of it. Hiring managers are actually, they should be good at this. They should realize how nervous you are about asking for anything. But they also, they can't give you what you want. You know, we can't always do that. So don't take that personally. It's not a judgment of you, Emma, that I can't give you $300,000 a year right out of college. Maybe somebody else, and you'll tell me, well, so-and-so down the block is, and I'll just say, you know what? I think you should go entertain that offer because I can't do it. I'm sure you're worth it. I can't do it. And you shouldn't consider that a judgment of you. Money is not a judgment of you.
Yeah.
So yes, ask for it, but don't feel that the amount you're making in any sense brands you. That's my point.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great advice, Ward, because while it is a negotiation, you should also empathize with the people you're talking with and understand they've got their own constraints to deal with. And in my experience, and this may not be everybody's, salary is one of those things that there's very little flexibility on in a lot of times, but mm-hmm. the other things they can tend to move around, like, we can give you some sign-on money, or we can give you...
Docs, relocation, vacation time.
Give you that stuff. And often I'm pitching how great it is to be in my organization, in the way your lifestyle will work, because that's... I may not be able to give you the money you want, but if I can help you achieve...
You get to have Ward Bell as your employer.
Or you get to be home by 5 o'clock. And that's a big thing.
Right? Like John, you know, one of your things has been, I can't be traveling all the time, right? You got a family. So you're looking for, you're making some lifestyle choices too. And Emma, you were describing lifestyle choices too. And when you're going in to get a job, you should be thoroughly aware of all of the things that matter
to you. Much as you can be, right? I mean, really think it through and discuss it.
What I've realized is, like, if you're in a position where you can actively look for a job that suits your lifestyle, suits your desires, you're not, like, you know, scrambling to find a job because you've been let go or whatnot, I would encourage you to make a list of the things that are non-negotiable for you, because it's really alluring when you're in this negotiation with an employer to say, you know what, I guess I can give up, you know, one of the main things that I was looking for in a job, right? I mean, this transfers to relationships as well, right? Like, stop compromising. Make a list when you're clear-headed, when you're not in negotiations with an employer. And then if you are presented with an offer, see if how much that matches up. For me, you know, in the past I've negotiated a job. They said this was actually our best offer. I realized, you know what, they're right. And to me, it's not about the money at this point in my career. It's about what I can do, like, to be at a company where they value my contributions, where I am actively supported to travel to conferences and speak. That's more important to me than making more money. So just, I would encourage you to make a list of the things that you want before you enter into those, what can be emotional negotiations.
Yeah, that's also a great point. Wow. I think we got a lot of great stuff for folks today, because while we focus on the money and the role and the title and things like that always come into play with the job, they're just there, let's be honest. But doing what fulfills you, what makes you happy, and what happy both with your work, with the people you work with, like the people I work with are really important to me. They become your like extended family in a way of, you know, the people you have to interact with 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week. I mean, you better be able to get along with them, to work with them, enjoy what you're doing.
Having a good manager cannot be understated.
What's that?
I said having a good manager really can't be understated.
Great point. What is a good manager though? What does that mean, Craig? What do you think?
Well, I think it's someone that you have mutual respect for. You know, someone who understands and recognizes your contributions helps set you up for success, and, you know, ultimately someone who can help remove obstacles from what you're trying to do. As an individual contributor, you know, I'm trying to get stuff done, and a good manager will often shield, you know, politics, process, anything that kind of gets in your way in that regard, in my opinion.
I got the ultimate compliment one time when I no longer manage right now, but a year and a half ago, I was managing team at Microsoft. My ultimate compliment I got was, John, you're the poop umbrella. and you know, I thought about that, and it's something I appreciate of leaders. And I think it's why I took it on, is sometimes you just want your leader to shield you, as you said, Craig, from some of the things that are coming your way, but also to remove barriers and to coach you on growing in whatever way you and the company need.
Or maybe it's not within that company. Like for me, some of the best managers I've had have sat me down and said, I can see that you're not happy and I can see that we can't provide you with the things that will make you happy. And I would encourage you to go out and look for something that will. Yes. And I, you know, my first manager, IBM Jill, she was actually my dad's manager too. We had this conversation. She encouraged me to go look around and I ended up finding a really great role that I enjoyed. My manager at LogMeIn also knew that I was frustrated with many aspects of the job in the sense that like I wasn't doing development anymore. I wasn't on a product team and I really wanted to get back to that. And he also encouraged me, you know, I support you. I support you if you want to go look for something else. You know, I'm here for you. Yeah, those were turning points.
That's what good leaders will do. They will help you be the best you can be. And honestly, it's good for the company. Even people go, wow, why would somebody help you get a job in another company? That's the place you want to work.
Yeah.
Because if they're willing to invest in you, that actually says a lot about the company. To me, like Microsoft's like this. They've Jeff Sandquist, who hired me in at Microsoft, often said, I want you to be the best that you can be and get you what you want, whether that's here or at another company. And I don't have any intention to go anywhere else, but you know, that's one of those things that it alleviates a burden, if anything, of knowing that this person has got my back.
Yeah.
I like that.
So far we've talked a lot about career and building it in sort of general terms, but I know that there's a lot of stress and anxiety that comes up when people think about that technical interview or maybe entering for their first job as a developer. I remember I had and continue to have huge imposter syndrome. I came home and told my wife when I got my first real development job, they will figure it out and send me home. But what can you...
Craig.
I keep dodging and weaving, I guess. But what would you share with people who are in that position who are just kind of have that anxiety about going in for their first development job?
I think the best combative is... No, that's not the right word. I lose my English the longer I live abroad. The best
antidote, maybe?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you. The best antidote to imposter syndrome when it comes to interviewing is preparation. I know that's not what you want to hear because let me tell you, it is a long process. What I encourage people to do is not to cram, which is something I have done throughout my career and it has not ended well. And let me tell you why. When we cram 2 days before our interview, the short-term benefits are very high. You seem like you're retaining all this information and you're like, I'm going to do really well. And you have this false sense of confidence. And then you get to your interview and you forget everything. And that's because that's not how humans learn. Humans learn best over long periods of time. There's a book called Make It Stick. It is a very great book. It's written by a few different, I believe they're researchers, but they talk about...
Put that link in there, Craig?
Yeah, Chip and Mark Heath.
Yeah, it's really great. So it talks about how humans learn and how the brain processes and encodes new information. And the best way to do it is to do, I would say, a little bit every day. And if you're doing a little every day, make sure you're context switching. The harder it is for you to recall information, the better encoded it's going to be in your brain. So even if you feel like you're not making progress, you are. And actually, you're doing it more effectively. So unfortunately, there's no quick and easy solution. But if you do a little every day, it's going to help your imposter syndrome and it's going to help you remain less stressed out than trying to cram 2 days before.
Context switching is a big problem in our industry, and I don't think a lot of us talk about it enough. Sometimes it comes up when you hear somebody say, Emma, I see you on Twitter talking about CSS all the time. How do you possibly keep up with all that's happening in that world? I imagine that you don't keep up with every single thing that's happening in CSS, but what kind of advice do you give people when they say, how do you keep up?
I guess the short answer is I don't feel like I keep up. I feel like I get most of my news from Twitter, whether that's through blog posts being published. I follow CSS Tricks a lot. I follow people who work on core teams of technologies that I enjoy. So the React core team, the React Native core team, things of that nature. But in general, I don't actively go out and look for what's coming down the pipeline. For me, that's not something I enjoy doing. So I do get most of my news from Twitter, and it's okay if it's not your favorite thing either. I think if you attend, like if your job, for example, offers education sessions at IBM, we had Feducation, which is front end development education. If you can attend things like that at work, that's one way to stay up to date. You know, Twitter is another, going onto a popular blogging platform like Dev, the Dev community. Those are just ways that you can passively stay up to date. And if you see something that sparks your interest, you know, learn more about it.
I think those are great advice. Ward, what do you do to keep up with everything? Because you know everything.
I do, and that's how I do it. I want to circle back to the cramming thing because it gets at something I think that's really important. Like if I wanted
before
to
before you answer that, let's take a quick break from a word from our sponsors.
So, John, one of the things I like about AG Grid, which is a data grid component for the kind of complex grid scenarios that we encounter all the time in enterprise apps. One of the things I really like about it is that it works for a variety of frameworks, Angular, React, Vue, or just vanilla JS. Does that ring a bell for you?
Oh, it really does. There's all these different companies that I work with where they have no choice but to use a lot of these different tools because they have different teams working on them. So being able to port their code or share that code and that technical investment they have is really important to them.
Yeah, well, it's important to us. Ideally, we're a consulting company, and you know, we never know what our client's going to want to use, Angular, React, or Vue, but they're all going to need a grid, and it's great to be able to reach for the one grid that works everywhere, AG Grid.
You know, at any size company, too, because you could have these teams that maybe they only use one framework, but eventually they're going to switch to another one and be able to take that investment again and use it, reuse it is really nice.
So if a multi-framework data grid makes sense to you, please go check out AG Grid at ag-grid.com.
And we're back, and I completely cut off Ward there as he was about to drop something amazing on us. Go for it.
Well, I don't know about that. But I wanted to talk about cramming and the mistake of thinking that you can be somebody you aren't, or that that's even important. So if I'm trying to get a job with Emma, and the job says something about CSS, I got no. Why should I think I have a chance of spending the night before that and learning is CSS and then walking in there and trying to persuade Emma that I am her answer to the question, how do I get an expert on CSS? Total mistake. I can't do it. I've never learned anything else that way. Why would I think I can? It's worth knowing what CSS is if I'm going to go in there. It's worth learning enough to say, okay, I see what that's about. But how about if I try to find out what it is that Emma wants from somebody who is going to be responsible for CSS? What are the needs of that person? And what, in my experience, can I bring that might induce you, Emma, to think, well, the guy doesn't know any CSS, but he might grow into the job, might be really effective. How he at least cares about what I care about. Knowing what your employer, finding out what your employer cares about and where their problems are. That's what that's to me the way to win the job. Not come in there parading around with your knowledge or your fake knowledge or whatever it is. Like I think I know Angular pretty well, right? I would never go in to a job where somebody's looking for somebody who needs Angular help, trying to sell them on my knowledge of Angular. Total waste of time. Let's get beyond that. Let's get what do you want? So anyway, what do you think, Emma?
I think the best employers can see potential in people. They can see candidates who are excited to learn, who they can mentor and grow into what they need. Like for example, when I joined LogMeIn, I had only had experience with Vue.js, and they were looking for someone with React Redux experience and TypeScript, and I hadn't worked with any of those. And I actually did my take-home assessment in vanilla JavaScript, but they were able to see, oh, she likes to learn. She has some potential. You know, let's work with her. And look, you know, they were able to help me learn on the job in a few months. A good employer will see potential in someone. Now, that being said, there are very specific cases. I have a friend, Kelly, who works in e-commerce, and she absolutely needs a developer who knows Shopify. Now, in those instances, that's a little bit different, right? You do have a specialization, but in general, employers should want to see potential. So if you go into an interview, you're asked a question that you don't know, just be honest. I think honesty is the best policy. Say, you know what? I don't know CSS as well as I would like to. If I had to take an educated guess, this is what I would say, but it's something that I would enjoy learning more about.
That's a fantastic thing to share, because what I often tell people is, I often look at an interview for somebody who'll say, I don't know, but I can find out. And there's many ways to say that and do that. Google, like people have asked me before, well, how do you know they're not Googling the answers when you're talking to them? Well, that's actually a good thing if they are, because then they know how to find answers to things. I don't expect somebody to come to a job, if I'm the hiring person, to say, you must know everything that's ever been asked of you in your entire life, right off the top of your head. Otherwise, but can you figure it out? Can you solve problems?
I can guarantee that if I'm the interviewer, I'll give you a question you cannot answer by Googling it. If you can get the answer to my question by Googling it, it was a terrible interview question. I'm just not going to ask you that kind of a question.
You're not going to ask me the manhole cover question, are you? How many manholes are in a city? Those questions, I feel like they should be abolished entirely.
No, because I'm going to ask, right, because that's an ask a question about out there. I'm going to ask a question about you. I'm going to ask you to tell me about your experience as it relates to something I care about. And nobody can Google that up.
Right.
One of the reasons I chose Spotify over continuing on with Google, I had made it past the Google technicals. I was in the hiring committee phase, and I actually went to them and said, you know what, pull me out. I'm not interested. The reason that I went with Spotify is, it was a conversation, and they allowed me to look things up during the technical interviews. It felt more like collaboration, debugging together. And the skills that they tested me on were very pertinent to the job. Like, they gave me challenges that would exemplify my comprehensive skill set versus just code a binary tree. That's how good employers conduct technical interviews, is by providing you with situations that you would encounter on the job, and removing this taboo of like, you're in an interview and you have to get this right.
I like that. I like that a lot. Craig, you've done some interviewing and hiring the last couple of years too. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think what I had reserved for my final thought, but having an opportunity to talk about a little bit more is actually good. Something that Ward said really speaks to the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I'm looking at it on Amazon right now. I've bought it multiple times, given it to lots of different people. And it's just that idea of, you need to know what that other person is looking for and how you can fulfill that. And then on the other aspect of that is, the last three jobs that I've got, I stuck out because I was different somehow. And it was not because I was any smarter.
Stuck out, you mean, just to qualify, you shined, you did well?
Well, I was different from the other candidates.
Okay.
It's certainly not because I'm better looking. But what I did was...
Oh, she laughs. You know, nobody can see how true it is,
like,
Craig.
I felt like he needed a laugh, because if no one laughed, it would be weird.
Right.
That's one of those best looking guy in the podcast, right?
Yeah.
For everybody to listen to.
Craig, because you're talking about something that's really serious. So let me.
Well, I was trying to make a joke. But the point is like, when I went for a developer advocate role, I recorded a video showing my skills of being able to speak to a developer community. When I applied for a job as a new media evangelist, podcaster, things of that nature, I created a short podcast specifically for the interview for that company, meeting the needs of their market. When I interviewed for a consulting company, I wrote down a number of different new products that they could offer their clients. And none of this, those things that I didn't become what I was going to do, but it just gave me an opportunity to be completely different from the many different people who are applying for the same job.
But not weirdly different. I mean, every one thing you've just cited was focused on how can I meet the needs of a potential employer. And I can tell you, I'm looking for somebody who can think that way, because we do consultings, right? I'm looking to hire people who I can put out in front of other people and say, can you make that person happy? Can you make my client happy? Can you make my client successful? And it requires a mindset that does nothing to do with whether you know red, black trees.
Emma, you're writing a book right now about interviewing. Is that right? You've released a book?
So I did release the book. It's currently not available anymore because I'm working with Joel from Egghead and we're turning this into a three-tiered offering. So, you know, it'll still be the book. It'll be revised and edited because I had some mistakes in there. And then we're actually going to turn it into a video course.
I think it's great that you're creating this content, but I imagine something sparked your interest to do this. What motivated you to go down that road? Were people asking for this or what? Because you've got some great experiences in a relatively young career. And I think it's great that you're sharing it.
This was kind of sparked by two things. The first being, I was super freaking proud of myself for getting past the Google technical interviews and for getting an offer from Spotify. And at that point, I sat down and I'm like, holy crap, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot between my computer science degree and the past 4 or 5 years actively interviewing. And I want to share that with people. The second was, I saw a lot of people being laid off due to COVID. And I said, I want to help. And so those were the two driving factors for that.
That's great. Well, Emma, thank you for coming on the show today. We really appreciate the conversation. I know there's hundreds of angles we could still tackle on all this. Maybe we can get to it another time. And as a final thought for our listeners, we like to leave something for them from all of our guests. Craig, do you have a final thought for everybody?
My final thought is just be different. Learn, study, be competent, but be different.
Awesome. Simple and effective. Emma, what's your final thought for everyone?
I would say recognize your small wins. Small wins accumulate to be big wins. And it's important to recognize even, the smallest shift towards achieving your goal.
That's great. And Ward, how about you?
I did something with my sister called Designing Your Life. And there's a book associated with it. And it starts from the premise, what if your life was a product? What if you brought the same kind of discipline that product development, product idea development comes to it? So, hey, I thought it was fascinating. We had quite an interesting group of people who took that spin at trying to find out what we really want. Helping you find out what you really want and then designing your life around what you really want.
That's great. And my final thought for folks is two parts, to celebrate who you are, but also look for opportunities and challenges to expand who you are. And part of that is just being okay with, if you are into front-end development, that's great. Just do front-end development and know that's what you want to do. Look for opportunities to do other things that also fulfill you. But don't feel like because a job or a company or maybe your own peer pressure makes you feel like you have to do something else, that you have to do it. You define who you are and you celebrate the things that you're good at. And it's the way you'll be happy in life, because life is not about work. We work to live, right? We shouldn't live to work. So with all that, I appreciate all of you coming on today. It was a fun episode to record. And I hope you all enjoyed it out there. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening to us. Yet another episode of Real Talk JavaScript. You hear from us every Tuesday morning.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk JavaScript. This show and all of our shows are available at www.realtalkjs.com with links and notes. John and Ward would love to hear what you think, especially about potential guests and topics for future shows. Follow and send them a message on Twitter @realtalkjs.